Hey, welcome back to The Good, The Bad, and The Batch. This is our part two of our Andor season two episode. If you haven't listened to that, stop, go back, listen to that first, and then join us here for character analysis and some extras. Take it away, Us from the Past.
Okay, well, let's talk about some characters.
Yeah, finally to characters. I mean, I know we've talked about this a lot, so we can just touch on anything that we didn't already get to talk about. Is there anything specifically?
I guess just like overview of the way that the show treats characters, I really enjoy. I feel like this is such a masterclass, and like these characters are very human and like, you know, I don't know, they're very realistic. This is like the amount of like, you know, when you make characters, you want them to be, you know, realistic, but also still have like a story and have like a fun, I don't know, thing about that. Like interesting, I mean.
Yeah.
Entertaining. Like one of the old verse, I don't remember if I mentioned this earlier, but like one of the first notes I have about Cyril specifically is like, I really cannot make my mind up if I hate this guy or I like him. And I feel like that's just so, I feel that's kind of like a mark of a good character in some ways. I'm saying that from a perspective of not like a My Little Blorbo perspective,
yeah,
but like a this character I'm not sure like what I'm supposed to be feeling about him, or like if that is intentionally supposed to be like the not confusing, but like, because like again, he's not like cruel. He is very much like aligned with law and order, but like you see him associating with like people like Dedra, even in the first season, where like he kind of intentionally saves her.
Yeah.
And that's how they meet, and he's just like, I don't know, very weird about that, but like but you know, I really appreciated his story in this season. I think it's like such a good ending to this character.
Yeah. I feel like I had like a similar vibe with him, with like genuinely I was like, I'm so fascinated by him.
Yeah.
In a way, he's like a weird little zoo animal to me.
Exactly.
Like, I just, because I think he rides the line really well of like, I can't tell if I'm like endeared by you or I hate you. And I think there's ultimately something incredibly human about that. And like, yeah. I mean, to your previous point, like, I do think like a lot of these characters are incredibly well written. And I feel like the sort of like way that I'm measuring that in my brain is just like, I feel like their actions like are motivated by their experiences.
Yeah.
And like the things that they say and do make sense. And I also think like there's a level of nuance to all of them that feels realistic, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like there's absolutely someone out there who's a lot like Cyril, where you're like,
yeah,
I can't really decide how I feel about you because your actions and things are challenging, but
like,
you seem like you could.
A bit of a hyperbole. Like he is quite a strange person.
Yeah.
But like I think in the show that is so so like relevant to like real world events like actually happening currently, like I think it's kind of good to have these like hyperbolic characters who are just like a little weird and like,
yeah,
but they represent something that is, I don't know, like I don't know how to say it. He's just like, it's not even like he's an archetype or like anything like that, but just like
yeah, no, I do think he's interesting. He's like a lot, obviously. Like I do think like, you know, he's kind of not necessarily even taken to an extreme, but I think he is just like, I don't know, like it's like looking at something under a microscope almost. Like you're really,
yeah,
seeing all,
yeah,
of,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be fair, I think like Dedra is a really similar way. Like,
yeah,
she kind of feels in a way larger than life, but like is also someone that I'm like, I'm interested by you. I mean, her, I'm like, you're a horrible human being, obviously, especially by the end of the season. But like in the previous season, it was interesting because like a lot of the feelings that they kind of built up were like that you kind of were rooting for her as the underdog, right? And her,
yeah, exactly,
very male dominated workplace. And then it was like a you go girl,
yeah,
right? And then now she's kind of in a situation where she's in a position of power. She's taking advantage of other people. And I feel like obviously a lot of those feelings have soured, and like she's obviously becoming worse, I would say.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I think like some of her actions are kind of like hyperbolic in a way of like a character like this, but I do think,
yeah,
it's just like fascinating to watch.
It is. I really like Dedra's character. I think she's super interesting, and I think that there exists a lot of actions that she takes that I'm like, oh, I could really see this going like either way, you know. Case in point, I think I mentioned it earlier, but like when the massacre on Gorman happens and she's like, you know, aware that like Cyril went down there, I mean, she knows he was down there and she told them to go ahead anyway. Yeah. Like, she didn't stop anything to be like, go bring my little guy back up here. She went ahead, but then she's like expressing like remorse for her actions. And like, I think I did read like an interview with the actor who plays her, whose name is Denise Goh. Yeah, Denise Goh, kind of like Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah.
Anyway, where she was like kind of addressing this moment, and she was saying that like she is kind of only upset about Cyril. Mm-hmm. Like, she is not quite showing remorse for like the whole massacre
her actions,
thing.
Yeah.
Which like I totally understand. Like, I think it makes sense for this character to be much more upset about a thing that personally affected her. And like, maybe one of like the only like, I use loving lightly, but like loving relationships that she's been in, having been like raised in a in an imperial like childcare facility essentially. Yeah. And like, you know, she just doesn't know what to do with that. But I'm like, I think it is really interesting if like you see her being kind of affected by like the violence that's happened. Not in a sense of like, oh my God, like not in a regretful sense, like, oh my God, what have I done? Like, I think Cyril is obviously like a lot more regretful and like, holy shit, like everything I know is a lie and like, I'm ruined.
Mm-hmm.
I think hers is a lot more like, she's still human. She's still affected by looking out and seeing people being like fired upon and just absolutely killed.
No, I think it's interesting that you get this moment with her. It's like, oh, there's still a human in there after all. But it's again, like the choices that she makes are to like double down and continue. It's like, she's like, it's sunk cost, right? Like, she's like too deep into this. But it's like, I mean, obviously, as we've already talked about, it's interesting because like, truly, there's always time to change, right? And it's interesting to see her be like, no, I'm continuing down this path despite what I've already lost. Yeah. I guess probably because she's already lost it, but
yeah, well, I mean, like, it's also, but like, she like continues with fervor to like, because the next thing she does is go like put her whole pussy into finding Axis.
Yeah,
so it's like, she, you still have this ambition. It's not like a matter of I don't know, like it's not like she's like wistful about anything or just like, I don't know what to do now, because
she's not, she's
witnessing
determined.
That and losing Cyril was like kind of the last straw for me, or like a big moment, like, yeah, it was a good moment. I really appreciated that little bit. And like, Dedra's character is just really interesting. I'm obsessed with like the fact that she gets put in fucking prison in the end. Like,
that's
such a good character arc for her, and like such a good ending. Like, it is,
it's very
beyond,
like,
satisfying.
Reap what you sow, essentially. Yeah, which absolutely. I think was great. Yeah, I do love a sort of an ironic ending, so that was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, like, again, like, her performance is great.
Yeah.
The character's great. I don't know. I feel like it's, like, broken record to say that about this show, because it's just...
it's just so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also really liked Bix, her character. She was not super present in the first season, but I think that, like... I think that they made up for that. Not that, like, I was like, oh, she should have been in the first season. Like, she played a part.
Yeah.
Her part of the first season, for sure. I really like that we have this character who is like, you know, really can do, and really like, she has her, she's very good at what she does. You know, obviously she's like, you know, ready to fight back. But she, like, you also get to see this female character be very like gentle and like have basically like be soft and be, you know, I mean, we get to see her like depressed and like just like zoning out and like, you know, kind of this full gamut of like human emotions and human things that she does, rather than being like kind of typecast into just like the love interest or like,
for
the woman. I appreciate that.
I think we kind of talked about this before too, but just the idea that like, I think it's nice to see like a female character in a show who is like allowed to be kind of like a vast amount of things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we talked about the fact that she's like, you know, dealing with trauma, and that's like a very like raw thing, and like, we are able to like understand and experience that, and like, also she does like, you know, get better, like, life, you know, it goes on, but it's like, it's nice to be able to see, I think, someone who's like struggling and like get themselves sort of out of it, and like, I don't know, I appreciate that they treated her character like she's like a human person,
yeah,
and not like stereotypical love interest or like the like I feel like there's such an archetype for women too, where it's the like gone off the deep end kind of, yeah, like, you know, just kind of crazy and wild. And like, you know, I don't know. They become in a way kind of like manic pixie dream girl esque.
Yeah, kind of.
But yeah, I don't know. I liked her character a lot. I like that she like became very like softened and sweet, mm-hmm. but not necessarily like, oh, so womanly, but like, just like, she's,
yeah,
just,
there was like no emphasis,
person, you
yeah,
know?
There was no emphasis on like, I'm a woman. And so like, I have to be, I have to do and be this woman thing. It was just like, her actions went along with her arc and her story. Like, yeah, she became much more interested in like, I want to feel better. I want to heal from this. Yeah. I want to overcome all of this, and like, it's good to have revenge. And that, like, you know, I think was something that like after she kills Dr. Gorst, we don't see her have these, yeah, like intense nightmares anymore. And like, you know, there seems to be kind of a weight off of her shoulders, which like totally makes sense. You know, there's not someone out there like,
yeah,
inflicting this on her or anybody else. But like, you know, it's not just like a one and done, like, oh, I got my revenge and now I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I really do appreciate that she like seems to desire that. And like, you see that in her story.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also like, we know that she's capable. Like, yeah, we see her like doing her various jobs and like all of this stuff. Like, you know, she's part of the rebellion as well. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's nice to see kind of like a woman who looks and seems kind of like a real human person,
yeah, exactly,
and something, and isn't relegated to some sort of, even like the like, you know, big hero, you know, like YA hero or, yeah, boss bitch or any of these things. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's again, nice to have characters that have sides to them,
yeah, which the show does like so incredibly. It's like, and I like, if you don't do anything creative, if you don't write, if you don't like develop characters, like that is really hard to do.
Yeah,
it really is.
I think it's like one of those like lifelong struggles, it feels, yeah, like
something, so, you're always getting better at.
Yeah, and this is like incredibly successful in that, and it's just, yeah, it's crazy.
I'm so jealous.
Anything you want to talk about with Cassian?
I mean, it's, again, I feel like I broke a record, but like, I do really like Cassian. Like, he's very good. Like, again, he's very human. I really appreciate that we get to see throughout this entire show how he becomes the like radical revolutionary that we see in Rogue, yeah, One, right? Because he's like, he is that presence in Rogue One, and Jyn is kind of like, maybe not exactly what he was at the beginning of Andor, where he's like, you know, kind of like, you know, fuck the man, like, you know, but not like in an organized way, or not in a way where like he actually saw what he was doing making any kind of, you know, impact. Like, he was mostly just doing it out of spite.
Yeah.
So I think we see her, Jyn, more in that, in his shoes. So he kind of gets to shepherd her. And I yeah, again, I like that we see his evolution through this. I kind of appreciated that. I don't know that you could really put his character arc or like many other characters' arcs into this like any kind of like three act structure or any kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, we kind of go back and forth, and I really appreciate the struggle of like, is he going to be with the resistance or against? And like, his complaints are valid. Like, it is stressful. It is scary. It is, you know, at times feels hopeless, and at times feels like, well, what the hell was the point of that?
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, I think that's a really interesting struggle to come to, especially given the character we see in Rogue One. But yeah, I like that he's not just like a, I mean, he's our main character and he's obviously a good guy, but like, he's not just like the main hero type. Like, again, I feel like with TV shows and movies with Star Wars that feature Jedi as like the prominent main characters, it's very easy to just be like, well, they're good because they're Jedi.
Yeah.
And so like, because they're Jedi also, we expect certain things of them. And like, we expect more of the stereotypical hero, kind of superhero-esque.
Yeah.
You know, type of character. And I don't know. He's just a very refreshing main character that is allowed to be human and allowed to be, you know. I really like that his part of his character arc is not him being like, I should kill less people, or like, I feel bad about that. Like, not that I'm like, yay, murder, but like, but like, you know, he wouldn't be the like valuable asset or get all of the things done that he did without being able to do that and be, yeah, that person, so that someone like Bix doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Who obviously showed a lot more reluctance to take those actions, right? Which, yeah, is totally fair. But yeah, do you have any thoughts about Cassian?
I mean, I kind of along the lines of what you're talking about, I was just thinking about this, but just, I think it's really interesting to look at him compared to like other Star Wars, like male protagonists, like specifically if we're talking about like Imperial era, like Luke and Han, like I think it's so
funny.
It's kind of hilarious. Like, and again, I think it was the 70s, okay? But like
we were literally having this conversation with a family friend the other day where he was talking about how he wanted like a Han Solo show and like how important a character he is. And I'm like, to be honest with you, the more Star Wars media I read and like consume and watch, he is just so unimportant.
He's just a fucking dude. Just a guy. And it's like, it's so funny to me because Luke is also just a fucking dude. And he's like, he's also like a baby boy. Like I just, yeah. And like a baby boy farm boy. Mm-hmm. And then like he has a major glow up, right? And like becomes kind of a superhero-esque figure, right?
Han, if anything, has a glow down.
Yeah,
he gets
divorced. Oh, very, very late. Yeah. But I think like in the original trilogy, right? Like it's like, I think Han is just like he's just a dude. And I feel like he at that point kind of was like the interesting, complicated character because like he had maybe a dubious past as like as though this isn't just like a very archetypical.
He
like
is so archetypical.
Cowboy, yeah. Pirate ass, roguish type, yep. Right? But that's kind of it, right? And so I think like when it comes to Cassian's character, it's really interesting because like, I liked what you said earlier about like, it's, you know, he does questionable things, but it's not necessarily about him being like, oh, I want to do less questionable things.
Yeah, I thought that was a refreshing like take on his arc where it's not really about him becoming a better person necessarily. It's about,
it's not a morality
him
arc,
finding his place and coming to terms with the destiny.
Yeah, it's kind of like he kind of like is enlightened in some way. Yeah. But I think it's really interesting because like I think like the like we talked about this earlier with him shooting the like driver guy who like may or may not have been friendly, we don't know.
Yeah,
but like that action isn't necessarily for Cassian to question his morality, but it's like to color his character for us, the viewer, mm-hmm. which I think is kind of an interesting take on things because it's not like he shoots this guy and then he also is like, I shouldn't have done that. Like, obviously we see in his conversation with Bix too, he doesn't have a lot of remorse about this stuff. And so I think it's interesting because again, you get to see the rebellion from this, like no holds barred, like they're going to do whatever it takes. And I think that's like hard for us to take, but it's like, that's kind of more of the point. Like it's a
realistic
viewer lesson.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like their conversation about that too, where because it's not, again, it's not about him being like, oh, I need to learn to be like less, I don't know, trigger happy. And more like his point was like, I care about you and you're like one of the things that is driving me forward with life.
Yeah.
And like if I were to lose you, like it's just like I would find there to be no point. You know, and Bix is basically saying like, well, you should have, like, I don't want your whole identity to be on me.
Yeah.
You should have something that you want to accomplish because you want to accomplish it. Like, and if like we're both going to fight this and I want to win, and that should be what's important.
Yeah.
Because it's about something that's bigger than us.
Yeah.
So like that was her. I feel like that kind of conversation could get really quickly into like a bit of a misogynist kind of chauvinist type.
Yeah.
Complication, which it doesn't. I mean, like, and I didn't have any, you know, fears that it would. But like, again, it's just a really like nuanced and unique conversation between them with that like facet of it, between that they're in a relationship and he's like, I know I want to protect you, without it being like, because you're so weak, feminine. Yeah.
It's like, because this is, you're just the only thing, and you're my whole world,
right?
Essentially.
And her not being like, well, I'm strong and I can do it, and her being like, I don't want you to put your whole identity on like, or like your whole purpose in life to be on me. Like, that's not fair to me. It's not fair to you.
Yeah.
We're individual people.
Yeah. I think this is the point of that conversation that I was trying to remember earlier, by the way. But just like, I really like between them, I do really like the concept of like, if we're gonna fight this and it's really a war, like everyone says it is, then like we have to give everything because essentially there's no other option than to win.
Yeah.
And like to not give it everything is essentially a disservice to that idea. And like, I don't know, I really like that part of their relationship. Like, I think that's really interesting because I also feel like that's not something that comes up a lot in media, I guess, where it's like, I'm willing to sacrifice everything and it sucks and it's terrible, but
and
like, we don't, if we don't win, there isn't a world to save.
Exactly. And I think if there is a facet of a story like that, it becomes like, yeah, okay, we'll give it all. And then, like, you know, by the skin of their teeth, they pull it off. And it's like,
it's because
you
group.
Believed you didn't actually have to die. And it's like, this is the opposite, where it's like, because you believed you did die for this cause.
You were willing to give up everything.
And you did. And it wasn't and just performative. Exactly. Like, you know, I, you know, give my life for this. And then, you know, you're pulling back at the last moment. Like,
yeah. It's, I mean, and, you know, no shade to that other type of narrative. It's very, again, like hero's journey.
Well, it's
very
a different type of media.
Yeah.
You know, it's a type of media that you watch when you're like, I don't know, I just need something that ends well and everyone's happy. And,
yeah, and they
know.
Have a party with Ewoks at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think that there is something like, and it's kind of why I'm very endeared to Rogue One as someone who likes things that are like kind of tragic but bittersweet. I love stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think this is that same thing where it's like, I think there's like a purpose in sacrifice then, and it's not random for shock value, and then it's also not redeemed in death,
right,
or by the skin of your teeth or anything like that. Like, I think this is a very well obviously plotted and paced thing, but it's like, it's one of those things where it's like you can see, you know, things falling into place, and then when they do, you understand like the weight of it,
yeah,
the sacrifice that it is. And I think that's like what makes this so satisfying to watch.
I love the through line too of this season, and we're kind of getting away from Cassian specifically, but of like, you know, if this phrase is like repeated several times, but like, make it worth it.
Yeah.
I want it to be worth it. If I'm gonna give my all, give everything, I want it to be worth it. And I love that, like, it's not only our heroes that live by that, like Dedra and Cyril live by that. But the problem is it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
Like, and Cyril realizes that. And I think obviously Dedra does too. But like, the fact that she literally, she like, obviously he dies, but like she doesn't. But she like gave her all, gave her life. Like, she is relegated now to becoming a number and a slave who's never escaping.
Yeah.
And it wasn't worth it. Like, what did she get out of that? She lost the only person I think that ever really loved her.
Yeah.
Her coworkers don't respect her. They're not her friends.
Yeah.
Like, she's complete. She is alone again.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you see the positive of it, even though Cassian dies at the end of his, like, you know, he does give it all, but it's so worth it.
Yeah.
Because of the ensuing freedom that the galaxy is able to maintain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maintain,
I mean, it's
attain.
Sick character foils, you know, but foils on foils on foils.
So good. I'm just like so astounded at the writing of this show.
Yeah, it is.
I'm
just
like, Tony Gilroy, can you teach me your ways?
Yeah, seriously.
Please? I want to know how to
can
do
we
this.
Do like a montage
please.
Where we learn
yeah.
how to write? Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it is, again, incredibly satisfying. It's nice to see. I mean, like, again, no shade to other shows. I think they, like, potentially have just really different focuses, and I think different, you know. I mean, we were talking about this before, but, like, just the idea that, like, I think Andor is a really well-written show, and I think it's made by incredibly skilled people. That's no shade to people who've worked on other Star Wars shows, obviously, but I do think Andor was, like, the perfect storm, right? Where it just, like, everything kind of amounted to this show that I'm like, is damn near perfect. And I think it's really enjoyable to watch and really insightful and interesting. And obviously isn't for everyone, and that's totally fair. Mm-hmm. But it is,
it's so good.
It's so fucking good. And I think, like, the cornerstone of that being, like, these character stories that are just, like, phenomenal.
Do you have any thoughts about Willman or Saw?
This is the one thing that I was, like, confused by, which you did flag when we were watching
I think it's more of a on my end or our end being like, okay, I'm not understanding something, because I don't think that, like, it's in there and it's just truly not really anything. But, like, I mean I do kind of understand why Saw is in this show. Because he is in Rogue One, and also, like, I think he represents an interesting point on the spectrum of, like, revolutionaries and rebellion.
Yeah.
Like, how you can approach things, right? He's like, if you think Cassian is kind of morally gray, like, Saw is
like
morally gray and crazy,
almost,
right?
An anarchist, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Also just a little crazy.
He's living very much in, like, the concepts of revolution,
yeah,
right? Not that he's inactive, but, like, that's what's kind of on his mind. I think the other characters that we see have a very, like, a big understanding of, like, the human price of these things, and,
yeah,
like, have more of a you know, not respect, but I guess respect for them. But like, I'm really interested in Will Min's character when he, you know, is introduced to Saw, and that one bit where like he exposes himself to the Rido? Yeah.
What I assume is gasoline.
Space gasoline. When he huffs the space
when
gasoline.
When he huffs the space gas, yeah.
Like I did write down like the one of the things that he says in that episode when that was happening. He says, we're the Rido, we're the fuel, we're the thing that explodes when there's too much friction in the air. He also says revolution is not for the sane.
just throwing that one out there.
It's like, yeah, I'm getting that.
I'm feeling that every day, Saw.
But I'm like, I think is a really good line, that like, we're the thing that explodes when there's too much friction in the air, for sure.
But
like, I'm trying to connect that to like Willman, because like, when I saw that scene, I was expecting Willman to then after that kind of go off the deep end and be this more anarchist figure.
He was going
to
be with Saw then. And right. He would kind of disappear and they would be concerned about it, maybe.
But he doesn't stick with Saw, and he also does, his character doesn't change as a, like that much to what he was, right? Like,
if anything, he's just having like a better time, it seems because he gets to go to, you know,
the only thing that,
to Yavin.
And maybe again I'm like super missing something, but the only thing that I can think is that, like, you know, he was not that, to be fair, I just don't even think he was like uninterested in the rebellion. I guess you could make that assumption, because when you see him before this, he's on Mina Rao, and he's obviously like kind of has fallen in love with this girl there, and like, you know, I don't know, maybe because he was like trying to make plans to like come back, but like obviously that doesn't happen. Like,
yeah, I also just like, I was thinking about that too, because like in my brain I'm like, the logical conclusion of a story like this is that he was uncaring before and then got shown
exactly
what it is to be a rebel, right?
Right.
By a crazy man who huffs gasoline. But I don't think he was like that. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can say is he's a side character, so maybe it's just not as important, but like, also, he was a little bit more like young and naive and boyish before.
And this was kind of his coming of age, his growing up.
Yeah, yeah, like he, like presumably maybe on his end that we're not seeing, he was having like a coming of age story, right? Yeah. But I think the like experiences he have, maybe because the stuff with Saw happens before Gorman, Gorman massacre.
Exactly.
So maybe like that's what gave him the mettle to like stick around and stay.
That's what I'm thinking, for sure.
But then after that, it's just kind of like, you're good, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like Will.
Oh, I really like Will too. I don't think this is like a stain on his character or anything. I'm just more so like, I'm personally just not making the connection.
Same.
Probably. Which is just like,
I would love to know. Yeah. I'm sure there's a Reddit post about
it. I'm sure that there is. And like, again, I don't think it's like shoddy writing or anything, because obviously like fucking, like, look at this show.
My thought too is like, again, like that he kind of has like a little bit of a, like, you know, this is what helped him like have the courage to fight in the face of this horrific massacre, right?
Yeah.
And stick around and like, you know, protect someone he loves and all of that stuff. And then like, you know, he's a side character, so he doesn't need to have this like huge evolution.
Right.
I feel like having Saw in like the earlier episodes, I was like less, like, I know those two go together, but like, I feel like the Saw stuff that I found interesting was the stuff towards the end when we get to see him interacting with like the other like rebellion leaders.
Exactly.
Because that's when you get to see him be crazy pants, right? By proxy, essentially.
I forgot in Rogue One he has that like big worm thing, right?
Yeah.
I forgot about
that. I forgot what its name is.
Who knows? We need to watch Rogue One.
But like, yeah, no, and he's like crazy and stuff, but like, I don't know. Like, I think he is interesting, like, in concert with other people. And, like, mm-hmm. I think earlier on, it's just like, this is just Saw being Saw. I already know this about this man. So I was, like, less inclined to the stuff on the beginning half.
Yeah.
I like Will a lot. I mostly really like Will and Cassian's relationship.
Yeah.
And I love how soft they are together. Yeah. And like, I think that's something really refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe it's just Diego Luna, and like maybe being around him is like, wow, you're such a nice, seemingly nice human being. But like, I love that like after Gorman, when Cassian's like, I have to leave, and Will is like, I'm staying, that they have like such a tender, sweet embrace.
They do. I'm obsessed with fucking Diego Luna. Like, he's such a good actor. Like, that when he's like, Will is like, I have to stay.
Yeah.
Like, I have to stay. Like, you can tell he's just like, there are tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
He's like, he is pleading.
Yeah.
Without saying
this
anything.
Is, like, I'm assuming someone who's like very much like a younger brother to
exactly
him, right?
Yeah, you know. And then that, like, I love the way that Diogo Luna too like grabs people by the back of the head.
I was gonna say there's something so, and like,
it's very sweet, it's very like,
it's,
I don't
like,
know,
intimate in that like very, yeah, like specifically like
it's extremely familiar
yeah, way. Yeah. And it's just like, like, I think there's, again, it's something so tender. And again, like have adult men be sweet to each other.
Yes.
In a, like, a platonic way, too. Like,
yeah.
I just, anyway, so it was really refreshing. And I really liked their relationship. Because even later on, when Will is like, hi, I have a transmission and I need help with this. Like, I do feel like Cassie and him still have that same rapport of, like, yeah, he's kind of the big brother. And, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I just find them very sweet. And again, I think it's something that, like, informs Cassian's character, too. Where he's, like, not only this, like, you know, hotshot rebel guy, but he's also like someone who takes care of other people.
Yeah.
And I just,
and the fact that like that whole group was from Ferrix and, yeah, went through what they went through together, you know, it's so good. I wish Brasso did die. I mean, I get it, but like,
I get it, but it kind of sucks.
I love him too.
He would love playing poker dominoes with Feitu and Melshi. Anybody else you want to talk about?
Do you want to talk about Luthen and Clea at all? I really like that we get her backstory or their backstory. Yeah. I think we talked about them a bit before this.
Yeah.
I kind of like how much of an important character Clea became.
Yeah.
Because I think in the first season, it was kind of like, I wasn't sure quite what their relationship was, or like if she was like just someone that he hired,
yeah,
and was then like kind of involved obviously in the rebellion. But like, you know, I like that they made this whole backstory be very you know, father daughter kind of. And like, I don't know, I'm a fan of like guardianship relationships, yeah, in Star Wars. I think it's very,
yeah,
they oftentimes do very well.
I was gonna say, I mean, obviously we're a fan of, you know, Bad Batch, which, yeah, is like that times five, yeah, maybe. But yeah, no, I was also kind of surprised that they had like Clea was in the season so much, because like, again, like I think kind of like Bix in the previous season, mm-hmm, like she had her moments or her place, but it wasn't like I was like, yeah, this is a side character. And then when we started this season, I was like, oh, it's that lady. And then she's like in a lot, obviously, and she's, yeah, very integral. And I like that we kind of see and start to understand that she's kind of like Luthen's essentially other half, in the way that she's like the one who's kind of keeping the train on the tracks a lot of the time. Like,
yeah,
you know, she is also like orchestrating a lot of this stuff. She's just as intense as he is. She's, you know, just as driven.
Yeah.
You know, and I like being able to see their backstory. I feel like sometimes flashbacks are like so-so, mm-hmm, but I feel like because this was intercut with like her when she's in the hospital, like I think it kept it interesting and relevant, because you're like leading up to something, and by the time that you get there,
the story is finished. Yeah, yeah, it's not like there's been flashbacks throughout this entire,
yeah,
show,
and it's, and then it's really slow, yeah, and it's, don't be careful with your flashbacks.
You do. I mean, like all things, like flashbacks are a tool of writing that you have to use,
yeah,
you know, well.
I also think like the way that those scenes are cut, I think they become very like, because she is the POV shot in, mm-hmm, that like as a child
love
section.
That POV shot.
Yeah. And it's like, but it feels very like experiential. Like, again, it feels like less of like they're just like telling you shit, and more like obviously you're experiencing it from her point of view. And like, even when she like witnesses that execution, that we're looking at her pretty much the whole time and understanding like her feelings about it. And again, kind of like how we're seeing Cassian's experiences make him who he is, we're seeing Clea as a child,
yeah,
collect all of these experiences, yeah, and like where we get to the point where like, I understand now.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know how you could witness all of those things and then not grow up to want to, you know, stick it to the Empire and be how intense you are. Like,
yeah,
of course. Like, I'm not saying that like there's a justification for like things like murder, but like I think you can understand, given these people's backstories, like why that would be something that they are considering themselves okay to do.
Yeah.
In this case, again, I think that the, like, no character action is like too much if you justify it properly with their backstory. Like,
yeah,
what, like, tell me, okay, fine, tell me why they're like this, right?
It's, yeah, it is. Again, it's just, I think it's just handled really well. I'm actually like, again, surprised, like there's a lot of characters, there's a lot of storylines that we're following, and it's all done really, really well,
so beautifully,
which is like, there's definitely more perspectives we're following than the previous season, because we were mostly with just Cassian,
Mon
and Mon in the last season. I honestly don't even think we see that much outside of it. Sometimes Luthen, but like not all that often.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we would go back to Ferrix, but also not all that often.
Yeah.
But like this is like there's a consistent large amount of characters and like multiple like 2 to 3 to 4 storylines happening at the same time, and like it's all handled really well,
so smoothly. Again, it's just like it's a masterclass. And
truly is
that.
Sort of like a dance. All of these characters, right?
Again, as a writer, I'm so like, how the fuck did you do this?
We'll find out one
Hopefully,
day.
One day.
Anything else you want to talk about with characters?
I think I'm okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about design stuff? Or I mean, we did talk about
I was going to say, I'm the
lot.
Main thing that I wanted to talk about was Gorman, because again, like it's how do you evoke one thing in another thing? And, you know, there's kind of a really cool art behind that. And I think it's, I mean, that's design, baby. but I mean, I think I was really like dazzled by the sets and costumes in this season.
The costumes too were just fantastic.
Like, especially getting to see all the like Chandrillon stuff, I think was really fun.
So good.
But yeah, their sets were like fucking gigantic. And like,
I'm really like after this, I'm going to try to figure out where they shot some of those things. And
yeah,
like
definitely.
How much of it was digital. Cause like, obviously a lot of it was, but like, I don't know. They whoever their like location scout was and like,
yeah,
all of that, they did such a good job.
I think I'm like, honestly, and I was looking and you could definitely tell, right? But like, I was trying to look. And so either they're fucking VFX people are crazy, which is true, but like still, even you can tell when stuff is VFX, right? Or they're shooting in the volume.
There's
but
no way that you would be able to VFX things that good with like,
no,
like
I mean,
a lot
like
of the Gorman sets.
Yeah, I was going to say, you would definitely be able to tell, right? Which means that most of this is built sets, which is fucking crazy.
Or location.
But where are you finding these locations? Yeah. Unless they found something that like had a couple of things and then they obviously would have added or built it out. But like, it had to be that like, and I'm thinking too, even like Mon's house that's like built in the round with that like courtyard in the middle. It's very like Japanese style.
Yeah.
Like, is crazy. Like even those like huge like circle archway gate things, like all of that looked like it was built.
Yeah.
Which like obviously a lot of the times the digital stuff is the backgrounds.
Yeah.
Stuff in the distance. So I'm really fascinated because like it seems like they made a lot of this stuff, which makes sense because all of it is gorgeous and incredibly specific.
Yeah.
Crazy budget they must have had for this, which is, but it, I mean the set designers, the set decorators, the dressers, etc., are doing a phenomenal job. Like, holy shit.
Like beyond good.
Yeah, the costumes also were amazing. I mean, obviously the Chandrillon stuff, like I said, but like even like, I think they kind of upped the ante on the Imperial garb too. Like, obviously they have their uniforms, but I think like adding those, like they've worn them before, but like the amount of people who are wearing trench coats, which is like, and like, I know they wore jodhpurs in the original trilogy as well, but like, it's like, especially with, I think, the choice to make Gorman like wartime France, obviously, like how specifically those Imperial uniforms fit into that, and how, again, that's another thing that just like immediately evokes a time period we're all probably pretty familiar with. And I was just, I don't know, I thought it was amazing. Again, like I've already, I think, talked about the white button-up shirts of the Star Wars universe.
So good.
Like,
it's something so simple, but like it does so much.
Yeah.
I'm
just like obsessed.
You can find a way to turn something so ubiquitous into something that looks like it belongs in your sci-fi universe.
Yeah.
It goes a long way.
And
it
like
goes so far.
A lot of that is like, obviously, like a lot of Cyril's outfits are kind of like 70s leaning after he kind of like gets to Gorman.
Yeah.
Obviously, the, I almost said the Nazi uniforms. Woof.
Well, you're not wrong.
Imperial uniforms are very like 1940s, like Nazi attire.
Well, because they're Nazis.
But like, then there's also someone like Edie, who is wearing like very 60s. I mean, she's literally wearing like a house coat, right?
Yeah.
With the sort of like blue makeup and the like the hair. Like, I think it's interesting how they're able to mix all of these things that are very evocative of certain time periods together, and it works.
Yeah.
And it just feels like a very full galaxy, right?
I think it works for Edie too, because like, I mean, you know, she's like Cyril's mom. She's an older lady. Like, I think we kind of associate those kinds of styles with like our grandmas and like things like that.
I guess because of when we
like
all
super
had
cool.
grandmas.
When
our grandmas are from.
No, I mean, that's exactly why. Yeah. But I just like, it's, but it's not just so simple as like, oh, we're going to put her in like a grandma house coat. But it's like they're doing it. It's still Star Wars. It's still like fits into the world.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, what are the things that evoke mom or grandma or mother-in-law or yeah, any of exactly. these things. And it's like, especially one who's like kind of catty and like, you know, I think there's definitely like, I don't even know where. Oh, I was at GDC one year and I was listening to a writer who was like a games writer talk about this. But there's like certain things you can do when you're writing where like understanding what an audience already has an understanding of yeah. and using that so that people are essentially having to work less to understand yeah. your world, right? Yeah. Because there's things that evoke, and I think that's kind of one of them, because I, you know, I think you can do that in design too, right? Like if you were trying to be like, what does a priest look like in my universe? And you like could look at what, you know, you could color block in a way to evoke that in the same way.
Yeah, you could also do something like if the religion in your world is very militant, you could split the yeah. difference between like, okay, I see that he's wearing sort of the priest collar, but also like, you know, there's certain elements of this that look like a military
yeah.
uniform.
So no, like, there's
I understand the role of this, but then also like the commentary on what this religion might be.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, find important in this world. It's so good.
Yeah. It really is interesting. It's like this fun little game that you can play with, like, I mean, this is the bread and butter of design, but like what like shapes and colors and mixes of things can get you this mileage essentially to get you to where your viewers are understanding, right? And again, I think this is great. I love Edie's outfits. I think they're very fun.
They're very
I mean,
fun.
It's just very like 60s grandma sort of a vibe, but yeah. yeah, no, I just, again, I'm always delighted by the show. And I think like all of the Star Wars shows have like quite a costuming budget, but I think this one in particular was like, there's just a lot of details, and mm-hmm. I think that's like really what sells yeah. the authenticity.
Oh, yeah. Any other thoughts?
I don't know. You seem to have, did you have closing thoughts or overall thoughts?
I had like been writing down a few miscellaneous thoughts that I had while I was watching the show. I think I've covered almost all of them
oh, okay,
in
cool.
other places, but I do have one.
Yes. Hit me.
I feel like there is this discussion in sort of Gen Z millennial spaces or like the between spaces there about the purpose of like sex scenes in shows.
Mm, yeah.
And like, I think that there's kind of a big lean on Gen Z's part of like not liking them that yeah. much. Like, I think you've had conversations with
yes,
people at work about this where like older people will be like, you guys are so prudish and
yeah.
like, you know, why don't you like sex scenes or whatever? I mean, that sounds a little accusatory, but like
it's, I think, kind of very much the understanding of people who are like older than us, especially like millennials, like mid or older millennials, are like, they never let us have this stuff on TV.
Right.
And like, it was, you know, it was only on MTV or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was like, you know, maybe you didn't get to watch that. And it's like, well, my hard won sex scenes in Game of Thrones, you know, it's like, why do you young people not want these? And it's like, well, because they're fucking everywhere.
Yeah, I think that they've got to a point where like there's some you know, I'm not like there should be no sex in anything ever, but like I think if you're well placing them as genuinely part of the story,
yeah,
that's fine. And like, again, it's just another tool of writing, but like I think we've gotten to a point with a lot of TV shows and movies where it's just very gratuitous.
Yeah. It doesn't serve the plot.
No,
the
it doesn't
thing.
Really serve the plot. I mean, like, I guess you could make some like flimsy justifications for it, but like in my opinion, a lot of them are kind of just like 30 seconds of wasted time.
Yeah. Because you wanted to reel in the adults in the room. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Anyway, again, not against sex scenes, but like, I think like all other things, they have a purpose. And I not that there were any sex scenes in this show.
I was going to say, where are we going with this?
But I'm really fascinated about the amount of implied sex in this show and the amount of like familiarity that they portray certain characters having,
yeah,
as well as like random NPCs. I'm not gonna just say NPCs, other characters,
yeah,
that are not our main and not our sides,
yeah.
But like there are obviously like Cassian and Bix are in a relationship, like we see them sleeping in the same bed together, we see them kissing, like, but I really appreciate
she ends up with a baby,
yeah,
so,
so something happened,
yeah.
Divine
could be a miracle,
yeah. Divine intervention,
yeah, miraculous conception.
That's the word I was looking for.
You almost got there,
yeah, you know, little of both. But like, you know, I think I really appreciate that like we don't really have like, I mean, it's clear that they're romantic with each other, but
yeah,
like we the point of it is really focused on the intimacy of their relationship.
Yeah,
I actually really like that one scene where I think it's before Cassian goes to Gorman the first time. They're like in their apartment and they're kind of have this like secret handshake they're doing. It's silly to call it a secret handshake.
But sort of like this gesture.
Kind of this gesture, this dance that they have. That's like, it doesn't ever get explained, but I kind of appreciate that it never gets explained because it's like, it really does seem like something that's just for them.
Yeah. I forgot about that. That was a really interesting moment because again, it's like, I think it is, I mean, again, like another cool tick in the column of this show to a really good job of things, but it's like, I think that's a really interesting and unique way to show intimacy in a way that isn't like graphic or like, you know, just because it's like, I feel like you have a moment of like, what are you even doing, right? But it's like, because they're like touching hands and they're so soft with each other, like they're facing each other and whatever, like it really is this sense of like intimacy in a way that we can see and understand, like, and we feel it, you know?
And I don't even think that like they end up kissing at the end of that scene. I think they just have their foreheads together.
Yeah.
But like,
because that's better than kissing.
It is better than kissing. Bite me. But like the amount of implied sex and the amount of like couples that we see in this show that are not our main characters, even like even the fact that beginning on Mina Rao, like Brasso is in a relationship with that woman Talia. And I think we see them sleeping in the same bed like one time. And then obviously Willman has this like sort of young romance with this other girl.
We also see them sleeping in a like a twin size bed in a cot.
Do they?
I'm
talking about the girl on Mina Rao.
Oh, I'm talking about the Gorman.
Yeah. I'll get to her.
Girl. He's a lot of girlfriends, this one.
Yeah, and I was like, I think in a lot of shows, a lot of other shows would treat this as like just a kind of putting the importance on like, yeah, all our characters are, you know, getting some and like they're in relationships, so that like kind of makes them cooler or better or like whatever. But I feel like the way that this show uses implied sex and intimacy like that, it's not about like boiling all relationships down to sexual. I think it really does use that in a way to communicate like some like the deep humanity of all of these characters.
Yeah.
Like with Willman and Drina, I think her name is. Like, it's unclear if they had met each other before or they had just seen each other and, like, you know, immediately been like, I'm kind of into you. But, like, obviously it seems like they had slept together at some point. And, like, obviously he really cares about her. They end up together at the end. But, like, when that happened in that episode, when they, like, kind of looked at each other and then, like, I think the next time you see him, they're, like, kind of in that, like, cot or whatever. I'm, like, I was kind of, like, what's the point of that? But then I'm like, you know what? It really is like, even in times of like insane rebellion and the universe being so uncertain as to whether or not like we're ever going to have freedom again.
Yeah.
Or this regime is ever going to topple. Like, there is still love. There is still, you know, human feelings of that nature.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that, the way that they use this specifically. Yeah. I also, sorry, one more thing to point out. When Cassian is going to Gorman for the first time, he stops by that little shop, that like travel agency shop.
Yes.
And you can hear when he knocks on the window, the lady who's in there is, they're clearly like fooling around because she hears him knock and then she like tells someone to like stop. Yeah. And then when she shows up, she's like disheveled. She's wrapping her robe around her. And I'm like, what a weird choice. But then I'm like, I feel like that really does serve to like round the world out a lot.
Yeah,
more.
I was going to say. People are just being people.
People are just being people. Like, and it even underscores the idea that like, even in the kind of the dissonance of like, this regime is so terrible and overwhelming and oppressing, but like people are just still going on with their lives.
Yeah.
And like, there's a dissonance there of like, you know, we're acting like this is normal and it's not normal, but at the same time, like, you know, people are always just going to be going about their daily lives no matter kind of what's happening. So I don't know. That was a lot, but I think
it's
something that hit me with this show specifically. And obviously, it's Disney, so they're not going to be like, yeah, do as many sex scenes as you want. But
yeah, I mean, I think they have like quite, I mean, they have like R-rated stuff on their platform at this point. But I do think that's like a really interesting thing to point out. And like, I kind of forgot about like a lot of those instances, but I do think it's like another way that paints people as like deeply human.
Yeah,
like,
also because, sorry, I'm just also still thinking about the different implications of this. Like, also, it's not like, a lot of the times when people, when shows have gratuitous sex scenes, it's very much like, look at this lady, she's so hot. Yeah. And like you get to see her boobs and stuff. But like nobody was like objectified in this.
Yeah.
While also implying that like, yes, these two people had sex.
Yeah.
Like I think that that's part and parcel why I feel that it was used so well. But yeah, I feel like a justification a lot of people have for having sex scenes in stuff, whether or not they push the story forward or not, is that like, oh, well, it's a human activity and humans do this. And yeah. I'm like, that's true. But a lot of the times you boil relationships down to sexual, just being sexual.
Yeah. And also like very heterosexual.
Exactly. And like as two asexual people, yeah. It gets old pretty fast.
It's just like I fucking Game of Thrones. It's the, yeah. I just am so annoyed sometimes with that show.
Or the just the general, like they could have been in a heterosexual relationship.
Yeah. Like we've talked about yeah. that before too, where it's like the idea of like sowing sadness because like you could have gotten a girl and like, it's just, yeah. No, I do think this show in a way is quite novel when it comes to mm-hmm. those. And like, again, it's like, you know, it's so human to just be like, you know, a wanting to partake in those activities, just even, you know, hey, the world's crumbling around us right yeah. now. I'm sure there's people still doing
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
But then also, like, I think the idea of like how lonely it could be to be like a rebel in a war and
exactly.
that like you're finding camaraderie in different ways with different mm-hmm. people. And like, yeah. we also see friendships, which I think
I was
going
to say, there is a wide bevy of different relationships, yeah. friendships, romantic relationships,
parents.
Sexual relationships, parental relationships.
Yeah.
Like, it's again, the show is just so human.
Like, yeah, again, it's like, and I think that's another thing where it's like, it's really annoying when the only relationships displayed are.
Yeah.
romantic
and specifically
or,
romantic and sexual
yes and heterosexual
yeah
romantic heterosexual sexual relationships it's so fucking annoying and it's everywhere obviously and I'm not just like the hets shouldn't exist but like it is I think it gets really tiring when like that's the only thing that you're showing and then that's the only type of love that really exists right. in this and it's like how sad and kind of damning that is to like not have or not be able to show those like different relationships
right.
I do like the show does that really well, honestly. I think that's like yeah. why it's so I mean, it's kind of the same with Rogue One too, where it's like it's not like anything like explicitly romantic actually happens in that
no.
movie either. Like you can kind of fill in the gaps of like what you want anyone's relationships to be, but
sure.
it's like they are comrades in arms.
Yeah, no, I remember when that movie came out and everyone got so pissed that like Jin and Cassian didn't kiss at the end.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
It's like
they just fought a war. I know that they're gonna die.
Met each other like 4 days
also,
ago.
They met each other 4 days ago. Oh my
like,
God.
I don't know. It's just, I think there's something so much sweeter about a relationship when you're like embracing someone at the end of the world. Like, and you don't have like it's not like you have a horse in that race. You know, you're not like, I've staked my claim with this person and that's why I care about them. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I think that's what those kind of like boiled down to me, where it's like, I honestly think that like romantic relationships in that sense, especially in shows, feel kind of like cheaper than platonic relationships because it feels like you're just getting something out of this.
It feels like that, I think, a lot of the times, because instead of having a emphasis on like, yes, this relationship is romantic, here's how these two people feel about each other and why the romance works between the two.
Yeah.
Here's how their chemistry works. Here's what draws them together or what, you know, or that they're together despite all of these things.
Yeah.
Like, this show makes me forget that, like, about specific romantic relationships. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, Cassian and Bix work together because
yeah.
of X, Y, and Z reason. Like, you've made the emphasis be on the fact that they do love each other. Not you haven't preceded that fact with, like, they're in a romantic relationship. So, like, you should infer, you know,
X, Y, and Z
about them, and I'm not going to show that to you because, like, you know, whatever. Like, it's not using romantic relationships as a tool. It's basically characterizing your characters, and then that's what follows.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. I 100% agree. That's a good shout out.
Yeah, I was very fascinated by that.
Yeah, I wish we got more of this show, but we don't.
Yeah, it's always the nature of these things where I'm like, it's always the shows that go on for seasons and seasons and seasons, no matter how good they were. Like the first season, they always end up shitty. I think.
Yeah. To be fair, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, is this show good because it was very pointedly built to only be 2 seasons and this is the exact thing that was supposed to go on the whole time? Or is it like, I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely hard. Even the best shows, if they go on for too long, they just end up sucking. Or it's always the shows that are never really good in the first place that get renewed. So
yeah. I mean, if you have to switch your story from like, I'm telling a story, I have a specific you know, message in mind or a specific theme here that I want to cover, that like that's why they're good. But when you have to transition from that to like, we just need more network television because we want to keep making money and running ads,
yeah,
that's when it starts to get shitty.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. And the show is the opposite of that.
Absolutely
is. Good job, team.
So good. Fucking teach me your ways.
We done?
We done.
All right. That's all for this very long episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Sorry.
Just a little sorry.
We will be reviewing Rogue One. I know we said that months ago. No, we will be doing a Rogue One episode because I feel like it's only correct to rewatch that movie in light of this show. But look out for that in the coming weeks. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and also Instagram and Tumblr at The Batch Pod. And while you're here, if you could leave a review if you like the show, and let us know what other shows we should cover.
So if you like story
and you like Star Wars,
then tune in for the next episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Batch.
Bye.